don't work under stress. I don't do that. Maybe that's my makeup, but I don't work under stress. I always say to myself something that I don't know whether I heard or whether I made up, and that is, God has no problems, only answers. And I work on that basis. Therefore, I put my life to God. We put our lives to God. That's a miscellany of suggestions, but get your life organized, get the balance right, not one of you insisting on the other, but both of you together working out the total load and seeing how you're going to carry the total load. Husbands, you may well have to come home from the arranging brethren's meeting and do some housework when you come back. If you don't feel like it, you still have to do it. There are times when that's the way it has to be. We've got to learn to serve each other. This is that submission thing again, isn't it? In submission, submitting to the marriage and to the good things of marriage. Now, are there any parts of those three questions that you think I ought to emphasize more or less? Or
I think you've given us some very helpful comments on the questions. They all have to do with this issue of priority and balancing of workload, both within the ecclesia and from external sources.
Now, look, you have a managerial job which has got lots of demands on it, and you have your family and the ecclesia. How have you managed to balance those out? Because for some husbands, I'm not cheating the question.
I work under stress, Harry.
I was just discussing it between friends. You see, sometimes a man comes home and says to his wife, "I've been offered promotion. Now what do I do?" Now when that happens, when it happened to us, then we discuss it. Now, some people are promoted to the level of their incompetence, and therefore they're going to have problems when they get to that level. For other people, promotion is a kind of fulfillment that helps them develops their life. But you had a lot of that, Ken, and you have a kind of compassion for people. I just wondered whether there was any particular kind of knack that you had developed.
I guess one thing that rang true in part of your answer was the issue of trying to organize some things out of life. And within the work setting, I hold a position where I was expected by certain people in the company to attend a lot of social functions. And I have routinely, over the entire course of my career, turned those functions down. Except the ones that absolutely were obligatory as part of the job. Retirement parties, Christmas parties, social activities in people's homes. I felt that would detract from time that I needed with family and at the ecclesia. And at first, I felt this was a career-limiting decision. It was a very risky course to take. And I found out afterwards, most people didn't know I wasn't there. Now, it could be a variety of reasons for that. But it was not risky. At least over the years, I've felt it has not been detrimental to learn how to say no. And one of the things that I've done, I may have said this to a few folks here, is often, if I was invited to a certain function where it was clearly discretionary, I would simply say, "I have a prior obligation." And no one would ever ask what the prior obligation was. The prior obligation for me may simply have been having dinner with Joan, as I would normally do at 6 o'clock every night. And if I felt I'd been out 3 nights of the week and I really wanted to be home this evening, for a routine, quiet evening at home, then I would simply say, I cannot attend. I have a prior obligation. And that never failed me. That simple response never failed to get me off the hook. I did have a boss once who called me in the office one day and said, "I've been watching your attendance at different functions." He says, "You always come late and leave early." And I thought, here it is, end of career. And he simply smiled and got on with the next agenda. He made no other comment about it. And so I feel, in a sense, by adopting that policy, it has worked for me in a career that could have otherwise been extremely demanding from a social perspective. Those parts about which I had no interest. And I feel I've been blessed to be allowed to get on with my regular job, which I like very much, and not be penalized for taking that position.
Right. Now, has any of the stress worked out in your family, do you think?
In what sense?
Well, you know, if you have a job that has stress in it, does any of the steam, that head of steam, get let off at home in the family? Or do you manage to contain it in your job? Because this is one of the things that's arising here. Amongst these elements where people feel that their life is poor, they feel that somehow there is somebody either adding the load, you know, when they just got to the last straw, somebody throws another one on and says the camel's back won't break, you know, and maybe some of that is from the husband's job or the wife's got a career or whatever it is, and that puts stress on the family. So bring the question another way around for both of us. How do we contain that? Does Joe know what your job is? I mean, for example.
Oh yes.
Okay. Well, there are some wives who don't know, because those who don't talk at all. In other words, that's a separate compartment.
No, the whole
we talked about ours.
The whole family knows. We tend to chat a lot in our family, and one of the things I did. For example, a little bit off the topic, but it's part of inviting the family into my work life, was that I used to bring my performance appraisers home. And I figured, well, I had the chance to read the children's report cards, so they should see how I was viewed by other people. And that was a very interesting exercise for them. They got lots of fodder for discussion for a few weeks out of that. Matching their own perceptions against my boss.
A bit of mileage in that, isn't it?
Yeah, that was useful.
We used to make up, you see, these appraisals of people. So I had two of these appraisals which were great. And one of them said that this man believes that promotion is a bandwagon. However, I feel that if the wagon were to stop outside his door, he would require a lot of help to get on. In other words, he's not promoted. Right? So
well, some usefulness in that, though, right? To discuss it.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes. One that says, you know, this man is a garrulous hypochondriac who suffers from a modicum of ill health. He was always telling his story about how ill he was.
That's the work of the words on that
one. Oh, yeah, no, they're English words, aren't they? I'm sorry.
They are, yes. Yeah. I'll tell you one area that I had a lot of trouble with, and maybe this would relate to some of the questions that have come up, and that is I always found the first hour home the most difficult after work.
Right.
Because I'd come home and I would have in my head and in my mind the issues of the day, and I related very quickly to your comments the other day about scratch on the paint on the door, and if I were greeted with that, I say with some shame at various points in my life, I may not have reacted in just the right way. And I don't know whether other men have had this problem, but that transition from work and getting into the mindset of the family and trying to be a good husband in terms of sensitive to the events of the family and the issues with children, and then later on in the evening, you know, perhaps some ecclesial responsibilities. There was a transition there which I found difficult.
One of the things I found helpful in this is, you know, and I had the kind of job which I suppose other people got here, which may have meant that this man's going to lose his job. Now, I used to pray about these things. I would pray at my desk before I started my work for the day. And for sisters here, might I just suggest that if you're at home, or if you're not at home, just work on the basis that prayer is the finest safety valve you can have. Just stop and pray. Because you're now speaking to God, who knows your condition, and through the Lord Jesus Christ, you'll get a great deal of compassion. Just learn to inject prayer. You know, you remember the Nehemiah situation, the king said, you know, and I prayed and I said. Now you could only do that because he was a regular prayer. That was natural to him. I've got a problem here. And he prayed right away to God. So that's what I used to do. And it works. There's no doubt about it. It works because the situation is then not in your hands but in God's hands. You're still doing your daily job, but you're asking for God's guidance. And I found that was one of the great helps. It just so happens that my mind can carry two or three lots of things at the same time, which is both a blessing and a curse. And Sister Blanche may say otherwise, but I didn't often feel that I arrived home and didn't want to talk or anything, nor was I particularly short-tempered. That may not be right. That may be a wrong perspective of one that I've developed myself, you know, thinking of myself, and it may not be right to go after our Sister Burns. But I think one has to just to learn some way of softening the impact. Because you would drive to work, wouldn't you, on the day?
Yes.
See, I didn't. I had to go into London, and I travelled by train. Now, the advantage of commuting by train is that you can read. So if you shift from your work reading to reading about the life in Christ on your way home, it does now begin to adjust one's thinking. Thanks for your help.
Thanks for helpful comments on that issue. I think that's something that a lot of people are wrestling with. I'm going to give you a very shortly worded question, but it's one that may apply to a number of people here. A little change of pace in topic as well. How does a couple know when it's time for kids?
All right, well, there are kind of sort of three answers to this question. The first is, sometimes the kid decides. And that may be true for some of us here. Then, you see, we live in an age, and that's another question you could ask, if you didn't live in an age of contraception. See, we live in an age of contraception, and so that without being personal, then some of us will be on the pill and so on. And if not, we use other means whereby we control actual conception. And we all take that these days for granted. And I think that's right for the simple reason, I'm sure, that contraception has been practiced in some form or another through the ages. It's just ours have become more sophisticated, and it is in some respects more dangerous. And because the pill interferes with some normal rhythms of life, has a certain threat to one's health, and in some cases can produce death, and we're all aware of this, but it is a convenient method. Now, it looks, therefore, as though we're in control of things. And therefore, as the question suggests, when do we decide? The normal answer to that question is that there is a strong sense of motherhood, wishing to be mother in woman. A very, very strong sense. Perhaps not quite the same sense in man, of wishing to be father, but you discuss together. And when those feelings are at their ripest, providing other circumstances around us. I mean, if the husband was going to have to leave home and work away from home for a while, then, you know, you've got to weigh up those circumstances. And you pray to God about it. And then you say, yes, we'll seek to bring these to fruition. I don't think the idea of simply putting off having family because of economic circumstances, or rather, we want to do our own thing for a while longer, are the wisest ways of making this decision. I think that sometimes, you know, especially over here on this continent, it may happen in Britain and I haven't been aware of it, but that life tends to be sort of pulled down together, and that children lose childhood because they're pushing and are pushed towards adolescence. And they lose adolescence because they're pushed towards being woman or being man. And all the commercial people exploit this because, you know, the kind of clothes they provide for teenagers are suggestive that they're older than they are, and so on. Now, I think this is a bad thing, in the same way that I think sometimes that newlyweds, not by choice sometimes, they have children right away. And so they've lost what it is to have just time of you and me. And I think there should be that time of you and me, and then the time of children. But we've got to remember that children are born into the home that we make for them before they arrive. They're not going to just change home when they arrive. They are coming into the home that we prepare for them. And that doesn't mean the knitting of whether it's pink or blue and so on. All those things are important. But it actually means that this is the home. And for that reason, therefore, I think that we should have a quiet mind during pregnancy. Not a mind that's being dinned by all these outside noises, because the baby hears these noises. We know that now. So if that's what we're doing, if we're quarrelling all the time, or we're short-tempered or frustrated all the time, then the baby knows that and is affected by it. Later on, we know it's affected. If we're breastfeeding it and we have these troubles, then the baby gets colic. And it just reacts to it. And you know how it has been in your house. If in fact you said a sharp word between you and one of the children has been there, the child starts to cry. Now, so we've got to learn how to prepare for the child that we're having. And our decisions, I think, are just the wise, straightforward decisions, biblical decisions, the decisions of motherhood and fatherhood, that we're just right. We ourselves are ready to be a mother. I'm ready to be a father, with what all that entails, and that our home, I don't mean the niceties of home, but this is a home in which a child could well fit, and when it arrives, we should be caring for it. Now, so those are some of the things that help me. Some here would be wiser than that and know more about it than I do. But,
okay, thank you very much. I once heard a phrase that said that the world's made up of two classes of people, those that are early and those that are late. And they usually end up marrying each other. The next question relates to that. How does a wife encourage her mate, or vice versa, to get to appointments on time when the other mate is, well, a little bit tardy?
Right. Well, I had a brother who was, I don't mean a brother in the flesh, a brother who was extremely spiritual. But he had a little proverb that he said to himself, and it was this: punctuality is the thief of time. So he was always on time. But there are people, and you know it, don't you? It's a minute to 11, and you know what's going to happen. You know who's going to come in during this last minute. And you know who it is that's going to be peeping through the glass door when you started. Now, that is because there is some lack of organisation. It all looks as though it's very, you know, come out, whatever it is. But if you, the way to do it is to say, our meeting begins at 10 minutes to 11, and aim for 10 minutes to 11. And if you're a minute late after 10 minutes to 11, you're still in time for the 11 o'clock meeting. You've just got to organise life, you know. My wife says to me, for the simple reason, and I am a bit annoying in this respect, you see, because I get ready, and well, ladies take a little longer in this and that, don't they? And so she looks at me, she says, "Oh, time we were off." You know, because I'm obviously showing signs, kind of like a horse being restless. Not my wife, but it is late, and as I say, at home, we get to our breaking of bread 20 minutes before it starts. That's how we set out to do it. That's what we work on. We don't like being late, you know. Sometimes we're late, for whatever reason, something, some urgent call, or perhaps we're driving a car, you have to some mechanical fault. But that being late for the meeting must mean that that we're being late for other things as well. And that builds up bad pressure, in a way. I'm going to do that. Because there will be a moment, which the scripture tells us, and the door will be shut. And you can't be late for that one. There is no way that you're going to be late. When Noah's Ark's door was shut, it was shut by God. And what is more, it was shut 7 days before it rained. So you couldn't just watch the weather or the signs of the times. So it is good just to think in terms of time is valuable, but we're coming to worship God. And you can't rush in at the last moment and then pick up from there as though you're already settled in your mind. The thing is to pray before you go and have time to pray when you get there at the meeting. Resolve. And if you're the one that's late, and you know you're always late, and you're... whatever it is, just say to your partner, "Get me out of the house." All right? Get me out of the house, whatever the time is, in order to get to the meeting in time. You resolve to do that. Just resolve. And say to your partner, "Now get me out of the house. Because whatever time you set, I shall always be late. Therefore, get me out of the house. Get your partner to help you." That's in other things. So there are some things.
Does that include the necktie? Yeah.
Well, yes, you see, I didn't have a necktie on for half of the day yesterday. Now, Sister Bunny says, "That's not you. He thinks I wear it in bed, you know." but there we are.
Okay, well, I'm pleased to say that's not a problem we have in our house. We have other problems, but not that one.
We don't have that problem, so... But I'm aware of the people who do have it, you know. And I've been in the houses of people who do have it. It's very exciting.
Then you'd really enjoy our house, don't you?
Well, there we are. And women especially, you've got a marvellous gift. I say to my wife, "You can be fully dressed now. I'm with a top coat on and a hat and a scarf. And you decided you wanted to change something underneath." And I said to her, "And you can do it without taking anything off." I don't know. Women are wonderful, I think.
Next question, Brother Harry. All right, this one's dead serious, this issue here, and I think again may have some broad concern within this area, at least. It seems to be a trend recently for young families to make their homes further and further from their home ecclesias. It causes a tremendous problem for the ecclesia because of lack of support, but more importantly, the moved family becomes unplugged from the ecclesia, including the children. How can families who are considering this step consider more closely the consequences?
One of the reasons for this sometimes is purely the economics of the situation. We had this, I think, yesterday, that I think I mentioned, because somebody mentioned it to me, how expensive it is to live in Toronto when they'd like to live in Toronto. So they've got to live out. So now we've got to make our decisions as to where we live outside. The next question is, are we going to our nearest meeting? Or are we passing the door of a meeting in order to go to the meeting that we prefer? So that's a question that's got to be weighed up. If we are deciding on our home because of the locality, irrespective of the convenience in travelling to the Ecclesia, we've got something wrong. We moved down from Scotland into London. Now, my sister Valleys had quite a problem, in the sense that when we were in Scotland, because Scotland is a bigger place spatially than England, then we had room to breathe. When we got down to where we are in Watford, we discovered that the houses were closer together, and then was the right thing to live in a village just outside Watford, of which there are many picturesque villages there. And it was a wise sister in the meeting, the wife of Brother Cyril Cooper, who just took Sister Bernice to all these places and then said, spoke about where the Ecclesia was and the convenience. So we had to move to London. I had to move to London for work. Therefore, we could live anywhere around London and commute in, as do hundreds of thousands every day. And we chose Watford on this basis, that it was an Ecclesia that had a Sunday school and a youth group. That was the first thing. In other words, it was an active Ecclesia. So we didn't choose because it was nearer to the sea or nearer to the country. We chose it for that reason. That's what we should do. We have ended up, as I mentioned to you, 4 minutes' walk from the meeting room. If we look out of our front window, we see the end of somebody else's house. And there was no need for us to do that. We could have gone and lived in the country. But we chose where we are. And consequently, we could always get to the meeting. Frequently, I wouldn't get home from work until about 20 minutes to 8. The Bible class was at 8 o'clock. And we always attended. Always attended. Because it was, we were there on the spot. And so Andrew had no distance to go to the youth group, to the Sunday school. We haven't got these long distances, which are all creating the stress of which we've been speaking. Now, some of it will have to be there for some of us because there's nowhere else we can afford to live. But then we've got to decide, are we now going to go from where we live, an hour and a quarter, to a meeting, because that's the meeting we prefer, than the meeting which is here? And that's a big question to answer. Lots of people in Birmingham pass meetings to go to another meeting. Now, I would find that extremely difficult to do. In my conscience, I would find that very difficult to do. If I were forced to rethink it, I might rethink it in some way, but I would find it difficult. And so I would say, well, if we decided to live here, we've also decided to go to the nearest Ecclesia. That's what we've decided to do. So that's what we'll do. And you may think, well, it might be the strongest Ecclesia or the weakest or whatever it is. Then inject all you've got into it. And that's what works. So this matter of choosing homes, choose them in respect of, one, the Ecclesia. It's got to be as convenient as possible for the person going to work, hasn't it? Every day. That's a large part of life over here, commuting. I suppose the minimum is 2 hours a day, is that right, Ken?
In total.
Yeah,
the average,
yeah.
Yes, an hour each way.
That's a lot of time out of a day, isn't it? Especially when you're driving there. I know we have tapes and so on, but it's a lot of time. So we've got to, in some way, to see how we can conveniently shorten that time. And how we can make the time of getting to the meeting and to all the meetings simple for ourselves. And those are the choices we should make and pray about it, you know. And then, as I say, just think over very carefully whether you are entitled to fix your home in a place where there is an Ecclesia and you're not going to go to that Ecclesia. Just think that over as to whether that is right in the sight of God. It's a question that needs very careful thought. I don't know whether those are helpful, Ken, those remarks. Did you choose where you're living? Because of what? Or is it the one you could afford, or one that you liked, or?
When we were first married, we lived in a situation where we were 1 hour from the Ecclesia and 20 minutes from work.
Right.
And we did that for a while. We were able to attend the ecclesial functions. There weren't a lot of them, but whatever they had, we attended. But we realized that was not sustainable in the long run. So when we moved to Toronto, we deliberately chose a location that was near the Cosmer Ecclesia. It's 20 minutes from the Ecclesia, and maybe half an hour, 35 minutes to work.
And that was deliberate choice.
Absolutely, yeah. Because we've seen the other would not work. An hour to every Ecclesial function would probably not be sustainable and create a burden on the children.
Right. How do you think circumstances changed for these young people since you made a choice? Certainly they've changed, I would say, for many people in Watford. Just because that's kind of demographic changes or all kind of changes. Have there been major changes over here that would make it more difficult to make the choice that you made?
I think so. The demographic changes are one, the financial is the other. That to live in as close to the city as we do is probably completely out of the reach of many families. So they're forced farther out in the suburban perimeter.
In fact, you probably couldn't afford to live where you're living if you were starting now.
That's right.
That's interesting, isn't it? If anyone wants to scribble other things down, or, you know, just arise out of this and just hand it up, because I'm not providing, you know, kind of slick answers to things, just trying to meet the actual problem. That's how we chose our home. It was 7 minutes walk to the station, and I had 50 minutes then of commuting from the station. That was all reading time for me. But that meant that my day too was about an hour each way. So the meeting was the most convenient. My work was next. And as far as shopping and so on are concerned, we can do it on foot. We don't have to take anything. We can just walk to the supermarket to where we live. So that's another saving.
I'm mindful of the time here. It's approaching 10:30. Gone through about half the questions, unfortunately.
Throw them out quickly. Yes, no, yes, no. Is that all right?
I don't think so. We'll try. I'll read them to you.
We'll steal it out of this next half.
Okay, just we'll see how far we go. Where a marriage is in trouble, is it good to seek outside help? Are there any concerns in doing so?
The answer is, we may need outside help of some kind. If the marriage is in trouble, then we're going to need some kind of outside help. Now that may be help within our own ecclesia, it may be help sort of beyond the confines of our ecclesia, or in some cases it may be that we go to a person who is a professional counsellor for whatever reason. I used to be totally against professional counsellors, thinking that there were so many risks there that they outweighed the other things. Having heard of some of these people and the kind of advice they give, especially in the world in which we live, which is rather surprising, I can see that for some families, outside help is, even outside the truth, is a good thing. You have an impartial person who speaks to each of you and then to both of you and so on, and they are used to creating relationships and recreating them, and that's helpful. So yes, I think it is wise to get outside help from time to time. Don't leave it until you've arrived at the stage where in your mind you've said, I'm going to leave him or her. Because that's very difficult for somebody outside to help you with. You know, I've met couples like this where they've already made the decision. And that's wrong. Get help a little bit earlier than that. Get help from somebody you can fully rely on. Somebody who will be confidential. That's very difficult over here, especially I know. Get somebody who is totally confidential and will just talk freely and wisely to you. I'll stop there.
Okay, thank you. At what age can one start talking to children about sex, drugs, etc.?
Well, there are two things here. There are other people who are going to talk to them. Our world will talk to them. And there are the things that we say. I think sex, drugs, all of these arise out of the daily readings. They use drugs in Bible times. You know, if we go through our daily readings, the children ask the question. As you remember the question we had yesterday, what is adultery, and so on. They ask the question, and strangely enough, they know when to ask it. They know when certain things are beyond them, and they're reading things, but they do not comprehend what they're about. then if you have a boy and a girl, then you've got obvious ways in which things arise naturally, and they can be talked about. I think the essential things are to talk about father and mother and me, the baby, the child. And the child wants to know where he or she came from. And we can start on that. See, these days, sex doesn't mean what sex meant in times past. It means now partly protecting against yourself against all the sexual dangers of the world in which we live. And that's made it extremely difficult. And they get to know about those one way or another. They do get to know. And we may say we will do it by homeschooling, but they won't get to know. You drive down the street and they see and they want to know, what does that mean? What does this mean? As I mentioned yesterday, why have those soldiers got no clothes on? You know, that was just an obvious question. And therefore, we had to, an answer had to be provided by a mother. I think we start very early in teaching what father is and what mother is. Then we go through all the simple drill, do we not? We take our children to these farms and things where they can see little ones. In fact, they might even see them being born. And these are great things. In our home, where we had puppies born, I remember. And we learned more from the mother of the puppies than ever we knew ourselves. In everything, weaning and everything else. And so we learn by examples, then by books, and by reading and the things, and by the scriptures. So I don't think I don't set an early age and say, and before that we don't talk. Because if they go to an ordinary school, they will get talked to right away from the beginning. So we have to inject the right things as early in stage as possible. You got anything on that, Ken, that you want to say about age or?
No, nothing particular.
No.
Question?
Yeah.
Are there times when you shouldn't tell your spouse everything? For example, when something has been told you in confidence. For example, at an arranging board meeting.
Well, the answer to that is yes, there are times when you keep confidence. I keep things that sometimes are so distressing that I learn that I don't pass them on to Sister Bernie. She might say to me later, did you know? And I say, yes, I did, but I just didn't want to tell you. And we keep confidences, and we become aware of things, and therefore we share almost all things, I would say. Just occasionally these things arise in an arranging brothers meeting or something else, then it just has to be kept separately. And we've had the occasion where somebody has rung me up, confessed everything over the telephone, you see, then rung the following day, and I haven't answered the phone, but Sister Bernice has answered the phone. And the person has said, I suppose Harry's told you. And when Sister Bernice said, oh no, he hasn't told me, it's produced tremendous confidence in the other person. Tremendous confidence, because they thought that everything would leak out, you see. And it hadn't leaked out. Some things we have to share, most things we have to share. There are occasional things where we treat things in common. But not because from sharing something with our partner. That's the evil side. Not that at all. This is a confidence that we've got to keep because of the ecclesia, or because of a brother or sister. That's how we work.
In situations like that, sometimes you can ask permission to share it with your spouse. If you're unclear when someone is dealing with you on an issue that haven't been explicit.
Well, yes. I think I mentioned during the talks that if a sister rang me up and wanted to talk privately, I would say it right away, well, it would be okay if I bring Sister Bernice along, won't it? But I wouldn't go otherwise. So these are the normal. I think it's right then that Sister is there, as I do on interviews and so on, when it's a woman who's being interviewed for baptism.
Here's the question that your in-laws are mentioned, perhaps in a slightly different sense than what we talked about earlier, but the question is, how does a married couple cope with a baptized family in-laws that have problems coming out to meeting and who have a slight problem with the mate you married?
The first part there, you don't just tell me you understand. That problems in coming out to meetings, that means that they are dilatory in that matter, does it?
Sounds that way.
Okay. Well, this is where this matter of setting up the family unit is concerned. And whatever our in-laws think about the person, our own parents think about the person we have chosen to marry, then having made that choice, then we have to respect it as parents. Let me just take it as I'm an older person. Then we have to respect it as parents. That's who George has chosen. Therefore, it must be right. And we don't now say, I wish George had married somebody else, or I had somebody else in mind for George, you know, which some mothers do have. The fact is that what we've got to do now is to take George's choice and work on it. And George now has got now himself, whatever he knows his parents think, has got now to make sure that his wife knows that she's absolutely secure in his love. Absolutely secure. And that nothing that the parents think will in any way dislodge that. He's made a choice, and that is right. It may be necessary at some stage for George to speak to his own parents and to say, look, I don't like this. I married Marilyn, and you're not happy about that. She was a sister, and I married her, and that is my choice. And I don't want any more derogatory comments at all about her, because that's extremely hurtful to me, and it is not right in respect of my wife. Now, and I would have to make it clear at some stage. So there are times when you have to make it clear in that way. So it's not quite it is an in-laws question, but as you say, it's differently phrased. As husbands, this is where our protector role comes in. That's what we've got to do. We've got to do it. You've made a pretty hopeless choice there, George. That's what you've done. Pretty hopeless choice. Well, that helps George no end, doesn't it? He can't get out of where he is. He's in it. But he doesn't want to get out. And therefore, what he's got to do is say, no, it isn't like that at all. We get on fine. And what is more, this is our home. This is how we're going to run it. And we're going to serve our ecclesia. And we're going to attend meetings. And Dad, I think it would be better, you know, if you attended more often. Because you get a chance then to say it, don't you? You know. And so, and that's respect for your parents. It isn't impudence or anything like that. So that's how I think I would take it.